Support for OPB comes from our members and from our sponsors, like Tracy Ray from the employment law firm of Baron Liebman. Tracy says that OPB sponsorship is a great way to support the community and connect with Baron Liebman's clients.
It's OPB Politics Now for Friday, January 12th. Tina Kotek has officially completed her first year as Oregon's governor. Kotek took office in early 2023 as Oregon faced immense challenges around housing, addiction, lots of other things. And she had plenty of critics in this deeply divided state where many weren't thrilled to have a hyper-progressive Portlander at the helm. So how'd she do? We on the OPB Politics team recently spoke to dozens of people about Kotek's first year, including the governor, and I think reached some interesting conclusions. Welcome to the podcast. I'm OPB Politics reporter Dirk Vanderhart.
I'm OPB Politics reporter Lauren Dake.
So, Lauren, before we dive into some of the themes that you and I heard in reporting this story, I thought we could start with Kotek's self-assessment of her first year. The governor held a press conference in Salem on Tuesday, exactly 1 year after she was sworn in, and gave her this inaugural address, you'll remember, that laid out, you know, how tirelessly she's going to work to solve Oregon's problems and also work to heal this divide we often hear about between rural and urban parts of the state. How would you summarize her message on Tuesday?
She certainly talked about the positives. Like you mentioned, one of her very first actions was talking about homelessness, and she declared a state of emergency. And on that front, she said her administration had actually exceeded their goals when it came to creating new shelter beds, preventing people from becoming homeless, and rehousing those who were already living on the streets. So that was a positive, but also a really good example of just how all the issues facing this governor are big systemic issues that will not be easily fixed. Because shortly after she noted those accomplishments, she signed two more executive orders, essentially extending the state of emergency, acknowledging that the crises are so far from over. Here is sort of how she framed it for herself during that press conference.
So I think many of you know that I played a lot of sports when I was growing up. And I think that experience of teamwork, focused on an end goal, and a willingness to push harder when you're tired is frankly really appropriate for this moment. As I cross my one-year mark as governor, I'm reminded of that feeling that this is the time to dig deeper and keep going.
She touched on a lot of other things that she felt were accomplishments as well in that press conference, you know, investments in early childhood literacy. She talked about traveling around the state. She visited every single county in her first year. Overall, she was putting a positive spin on a lot of seemingly daunting tasks that face her in the next 3 years.
Yeah, you know, I don't think we heard Kotek claiming victory here, right? But she did emphasize, as you're saying, that she was working very hard, as she's saying, that she's working very hard to address these top issues. And there was also this acknowledgement, I think, that a lot of Oregonians, maybe she's doing all this, but folks are getting up, looking around, and seeing all these worrisome problems that probably look worse than they felt not all that long ago. So Kotek is pledging to keep going, but let's get into the governor's year in a little more detail, and maybe start with what, for some of Kotek's critics at least, has been one of the most surprising things they saw. People who listen to this show are familiar, no doubt, with the governor's reputation. You know, as House Speaker, she was a powerful lawmaker. She helped push some extremely progressive legislation, and she would often take on the role of pressing more conservative Senate Democrats to get on board with that legislation. So when she ran for governor, it wasn't too hard for her opponents to paint Kotek as this Portland super liberal who would lead the state as an ideologue. But Lauren, that is often not what we saw this year.
No, like you said, Kotek surprised some people this year. As we noted in our article on the campaign trail for governor, Kotek was the progressive candidate from the progressive city of Portland, Oregon. She was the former House Speaker behind pretty left-leaning policies like enshrining reproductive rights in our state constitution. She is largely the reason why Oregon was the first in the country to have statewide rent control. But once we started talking to all these people, it became evident how many people were just sort of struck with how conservative she sounded for the past year. Looking at some of the things that she's called for, I mean, she kind of sounds a lot more like what you would expect Christine Drazen, the Republican candidate for governor, to sound like. She, Kotek, has called for tightening drug control laws. She wants to make it easier to bring land into the urban growth boundary so it can be developed. She called for more police into Portland and a moratorium on taxes for Portlanders. One longtime lobbyist who supported Drazen's bid for governor told me that he was getting ready for this presentation to a group of lawyers to kind of talk about the political landscape of the state. And he said that he warned them up front that his assessment when it comes to Kotek and housing in particular was going to be flattering. And he was even sort of surprised with his own take because he was just so used to battling her on so many different fronts while she was serving as speaker that, you know, he was surprised that as governor, he felt like their goals were much more aligned.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about Sean Gillians. He was a lobbyist for industry, did major battle with Kotek over climate change legislation in 2019 and 2020, and seemed to sort of get the best of that fight, at least for the time. But now we hear him saying these positive things. It is very striking. And this is a facet of Kotek's year that I think not just Jill, I mean, a lot of people we talked to agree with this sentiment, but I have to acknowledge we also heard pushback. Kotek's fiercest critics, you mentioned Drazen, who lost to her in 2022, you know, would say that the idea that she has become more moderate is this mirage that maybe she's trying to put out there, but that Kotek actually hasn't done much to speak of, according to them. And in fact, and especially, I should say, hasn't done much to speak of, given that Democrats run the whole show here. And then actually, if you talk to some on the Democratic side, they would say that the idea that people have of Kotek as this hyper-progressive isn't actually right. You know, she has passed all this progressive legislation. She is very progressive on many social issues especially. But according to these folks, you know, she shows a willingness to negotiate and bargain on a lot of things rather than drawing a hard line. We asked Kotek what she made of this, and, you know, I don't think she's fully on board with the moderate picture that some folks painted. Here's what she said.
The reason I won last year's election because people liked where I was on reproductive rights, climate, gun violence prevention, pretty core progressive values for the state. But I've also been very pragmatic in my years as a legislative leader. You have to figure out how to move forward. You need to know how to make deals. And you have to listen to people.
You know, Kotek was asked about this another time in December, and she said, yeah, I'm progressive, but I'm also just tired of things not working. We need things to work in this state for once, and that's what I'm focused on. And maybe that is leading to some pragmatism. You know, speaking of the problems that the state is facing, Lauren, since the very first days of her administration, the governor has been focused on, I would say, a subset of the state's problems in minute detail, albeit some very prominent problems.
She has. She's really focused on primarily three things in her first year: housing and homelessness, behavioral health, and early childhood literacy. And we talked about already how one of her first actions as governor was declaring a homelessness state of emergency. She also set a very ambitious goal for how many housing units she wanted to see built in the coming years. With behavioral health, she's already announced millions of dollars to expand mental health treatments for kids around the state. She's talked recently about this new center in Portland being built for those struggling with addiction. So she's been able to point to tangible accomplishments that have come from this hyper focus. But we have also talked to some people who felt like that focus has sort of come at the cost of other big issues facing our state, primarily global climate change. We talked to some environmental advocates who said they felt like the governor should be doing more to weave climate change into all her other priorities so that, you know, as she pushes for more housing, she ensures that that housing is not being built while relying on fossil gas, or as she pushes for more semiconductor manufacturing, it's not increasing industrial emissions. So no one really disagrees that the issues that she's focusing on aren't important issues, but we did hear criticism that it shouldn't come at a cost of other very important priorities.
Right. And you know, I think Kotek did suggest to us when we asked about this that she actually might focus more on climate and environmental issues in the coming year. Maybe there is more room in sort of her headspace after that first initial push to handle some of this stuff. But she also defended her record on this. I mean, she said, you know, she's taken care of the pressing environmental issues that came before her. She called herself an environmentalist. One thing she brought up specifically is this sort of landmark settlement between the federal government, Oregon, Washington, and the tribes over rescuing salmon in the Columbia River. She thinks that she's sort of really dealt with the things that came before her. Now, the question is whether she's been as proactive as some of the environmental and climate folks might like. It sounds like probably not yet.
Right. And like you said, she sees room for that in the coming years. There was something else that came up too when we were talking to people about Kotek's focus. And both her supporters and her detractors really acknowledge that Kotek is incredibly intelligent, but it's also clear that the governor sees everything that comes out of her office as teamwork. She is the clear leader of that team, and that can cut both ways because some people have said, because she is so involved, it creates sort of a bottleneck of sorts. Here's how she put it.
I don't want it to be a barrier, and I haven't heard that, but if people do think it's creating any kind of response delay, then I want to address that. It is, you never want to hold things up.
Kotek also said she's going to work on delegating in the future. So moving on to something else that, Dirk, you and I both saw as reporters, and something else that people mentioned, is that, you know, Kotek was the former Speaker of the House for 9 years, longer than any speaker in state history. And now she's in a very different role as governor. And it's been sort of a bumpy transition at times.
Yes. I mean, there is maybe no better example of this, right, than the last day of session when one of the governor's priority bills died, not because of Republicans, but because enough Senate Democrats refused to support it. That was over concerns that it weakened state land use laws. This was a bill designed to fast track more land to build housing on. You know, this is something that was pretty dramatic at the time. The governor even showed up to the Senate floor in sort of a last ditch attempt to get this thing across the finish line, and it didn't work. And people we talked to saw it as really part of the learning curve that Kotek has had to negotiate as governor. She's not speaker anymore. You know, she in theory can't kill your bill or threaten to pull your committee assignment or do any of the other things theoretically that a speaker can do when they want to get a bill across the finish line. And instead, people we talked to, actually including Kotek, described the governor's role vis-a-vis the legislature as more of an advocate. You know, she's pushing lawmakers to support her ideas like any other advocate. Obviously, that's not a perfect analogy. Kotek, you know, can veto bills. She can veto budget items. She has a very big bully pulpit. But the point is that the governor's role with the legislature can be very relationship-based because there is that advocate perspective. And you know, Kotek is not a person who is naturally all that backslappy with other politicians. She hasn't hosted a ton of receptions at Mahonia Hall. She's in general just more introverted and can be pretty buttoned up and businesslike. She also obviously has some long relationships and remaining enemies in the Capitol. And I think that worked against her when she stepped in to try to end the walkout by Senate Republicans this year. That fizzled pretty quickly. Anyway, we asked Kotek about relationships, how she sort of navigated the transition from legislator to governor. Here's some of what she said.
It is a different role. I have very cordial relationships with a lot of legislators, and they have a different job to do. And it's my job to say, like, hey, that's a nice idea, and do you realize that might be hard to do? Mm-hmm. I really think that's my job.
And I will say, Lauren, that one consistent thing I heard from Democrats was that toward the end of last year's session, you know, there were these growing pains, but toward the end of the session, people think Kotek really seemed to be hitting her stride in terms of making that transition from speaker to governor and realizing what her new role means and how maybe it works best with the legislature.
Let's talk about one thing that she definitely did do to build relationships, which was her One Oregon tour. Early on, she promised to be the governor for the entire state. She cited former Republican Governor Vic Atiyeh as her inspiration. And the idea was she was going to travel to all 36 counties in the state, which she did. So she talked about going to a homeless shelter in Cottage Grove. She talked to seed farmers in Jefferson County. She went to a dive bar called the Dixie in Tangent. And she said all of that helped her walk away with a much deeper understanding of the challenges that people in the state are facing. One person the governor met with on this tour was Representative Mark Owens. He's a Republican from Crane in Eastern Oregon. And as part of this tour, he had Kotek and her wife, Amy, over to his house for dinner and invited local ranchers and farmers. And he was very positive when he talked about the experience.
It wasn't there to try to solve any policy issues. It wasn't there to try to talk about her three priorities, or maybe our priorities in House District 60. It was just there to get to know each other.
So Kotek talked to a lot of people who probably did not vote for her, who live outside the urban areas, but that doesn't really seem to have helped her polling numbers.
Yeah, you know, every poll we've seen about Kotek's approval numbers suggests she has a long way to go if she's really going to ease this urban-rural divide she has talked about. This is, you know, something she framed as, in her inauguration, she talked about the last Republican governor, Vic Atiyeh, and how he was able to sort of ease these strained relationships. That's only gotten worse over the past decade, two decades, three decades. It's been a while since a Republican was in office, but obviously polarization is not particularly in a good place right now. And you know, I think Kotek acknowledges that despite this effort to shake hands, meet, she said something like 1,000 people. She's written a bunch of thank you notes. She clearly met a lot of people. I think she acknowledges that maybe when it comes to approval numbers and you know what people are polling, actually making a lot of progress might not be possible. Just a couple examples. There are quarterly polls released by the firm Morning Consult that show approval ratings for every governor in the state. Those often showed former Governor Brown at or very near the bottom nationwide, and that trend has continued for Kotek. She does have a higher percentage of people in these who say they're not sure what they think of her as opposed to Brown, but her actual approval numbers are still pretty low in the 45 to 46 range. They're worse when you talk to DHM Research, which is a Portland polling firm that talks to Oregonians regularly about whether they have a positive or negative impression of Kotek. When Kotek took office, DHM says 34% of the people polled had a positive impression of her. That slipped to 30% by August. And in the most recent round of polling, came in at 29%. So it has slipped pretty consistently. John Horvick, the pollster who collects these numbers, believes that not all of that is Kotek's fault. As I mentioned, you know, in Oregon and around the nation, polarization is at record levels. People are sort of in their own silos. Horvick thinks Kotek is being painted with the same brush as the former governor, Brown. Here is how he put it.
A large part because it's momentum carried forward from Brown, and people aren't going to view her as a blank slate. They're going to view her as Brown's successor, or as a Democrat, as a whatever. It's not just going to be who she is or the accomplishments she had in the legislative session.
Well, we know that Kotek is a very different governor than Brown in a lot of ways. Brown was more apt to really want to build consensus and collaborate before making a decision. She thrived on those relationships. She was seemingly more outwardly social. Kotek, no one has any doubts that she is making the decisions in her office. She is steering the conversations. She is involved in the nitty-gritty, like we said. It seems like Kotek just sort of acknowledges that the low approval ratings are part of being in a very politically divided state and are just going to sort of be par for the course, at least for now. Here's what she said.
It is very hard to communicate with people. We're in our silos of information, right? And so if your social media feed puts you in one direction or the other, it is really hard to break through that. So all I can hope is that we will continue to communicate over the course of the first term about what we're doing, listening to people, getting things done. It will be up to voters whether I've made the case. But my message is I'm just going to keep working hard.
Working hard. I think we started there. Let's end there. We will let the governor get the last word in. Obviously, we'll be watching closely as the next year of Kotek's administration unfolds. Lauren, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Dirk.
This episode of OPB Politics Now was produced by Andrew Thien, with audio engineering from Nalene Silva. Our music comes from Audio Network. We'll be back next week with more political news from across the Pacific Northwest. Until then, you can find all of OPB's reporting, including our lengthy and, I have to say, very interesting story on the governor's first year at opb.org. While you're there, you can become an OPB member. You can also rate and review us in your podcast app of choice. Thanks for your support, and thanks for listening.
I'm Alex Olinsky, City Government Reporter at OPB. We know you love hearing about the latest political battles on this podcast. OPB's Salmon Wars podcast will give you insights into some of the history behind what's happening now. It tells the story of one Yakima Nation family who has been fighting for salmon in the Columbia River across generations. Find Salmon Wars wherever you listen to podcasts.